if I decide I'm ready to take this leap of faith, I want to change my business, what's my next step?
Your next step, I always say start paying yourself. I don't care if it's $10 a week. You bring the most knowledge and the most value to your business. If you don't put the burden of paying you onto the business, you will never get to a point where that is going to be okay, because everything else will always supersede it. You are valuable. You need to start paying yourself.
Welcome to the Andrea Engstrom Show for Bold Women in Business. We are passionate about helping you break through to your next level of abundance, success, and freedom so that you can create the life you desire and inspire others to do the same. I'm your host, Andrea Engstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Brenda Stroud. Hey, Brenda.
Hey, girl. Hey.
Hey. On today's show, I'm so excited for this one. We're going to talk about how to pay yourself first using a profit first approach. And our guest today is Libby DeRosa. Hey, Libby.
Hey there.
Hey, I'm so glad that you're here. Libby's a profit coach and investor, and Libby and her husband built a campground from the ground up, implemented some super smart profit strategies, and then sold it for multiple $1 million. And now she coaches business owners, including me, on how to create more profit from their business. Libby, we're so excited to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, Libby, tell us a little bit about your journey in your career.
Well, I am the mother of four children, married 35 years. Let me start with that. Married 35 years, mother of four, which happens to be triplets, and then a surprise that came along 15 months later. They all got married 10 months apart, and now I'm nanny to 14, going on 17 grandchildren, wow. All 7 years and under.
Wow. So
we have a lot of happy chaos in our house. But my background initially was as a physical therapist, and moved into a director's role there. And then we also owned real estate back early in our marriage, and did duplexes, single family homes, BRRRR strategy, house hacking. And then when all those babies came along, just decided that it was a little bit too much. In God's grace, not only did we buy all those properties in a significant economic downturn, we were not smart enough to know what we were doing. It just, it was God. And ended up selling all those properties for double their value.
Wow.
Then we built a custom home, decided that we wanted to go into business for ourselves. And that's when the idea of the campground was born, and built that in 2006 and seven, opened it in 2007, operated that for 15 years, and sold to our corporate headquarters in October of 2021.
Wow, that's awesome.
So yeah, it was a wild ride. And now back into real estate. I told my husband I just love real estate and wanted to get back into it. And he said, you can do whatever you want as long as I'm not swinging a hammer now. So so that kind of led to the note investing and the syndications and, finding ways to make a profit without actually doing all the active work that goes behind it.
I love that's it. Awesome. So you all have positioned yourself to have your money making money for you today, instead of being the one that swings the hammer, like your husband said. And I just want everybody to like recognize for a second that Libby built a campground with triplets in tow, like with four kids, four young kids. And tell us about what that was like building a business with all of that.
I have told people that I would rather have four kids under 15 months again than build from the ground up a campground again. it was exhausting. It was, this is where you really have to understand and connect with your why. We ran into zoning issues. We ran into a contractor that left us mid project. The contractor underbid by $100,000, which is a huge deal in a project that is not going to cash flow actively, for a good 18 months from the time you break ground. Banks don't look upon that lightly. And just, the 2 weekends after we opened, we had an absolute downpour. I mean, flooded the back half of the campground. You don't know where your water management issues and opportunities are until it happens. And, you know, had a completely full campground, people just, you know, yelling at you. I think I cried so much that weekend. And Tom never stopped, you know, working the whole weekend trying to keep people happy. So it was extremely difficult and extremely rewarding once we figured out what we were doing.
You know, wow. It's funny. I feel like that, you know, having four kids under 2 years old all at the same time, like, I feel like there's something to that story that maybe taught you what you're capable of when it comes to, like, I can handle hard things. I can handle chaos and I'm going to get through this. Okay. Right.
Yes. Yes. It's funny because, you know, when you know that you're called to do something, you just keep pressing through the hard. And that, you know, is exactly, and, you know, we were franchising because of the fact that we had no client base. But even in that first year, I remember we made $184,000. And I think that maybe we netted, I don't know, maybe $20,000 at the most. You know, I still had my job. And we told our kids that they wouldn't get paid that year, that they were gonna, I probably broke every child labor law there is. But, you know, they're well-adjusted, productive, happy adults now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, now, go ahead, Brenda.
I'm excited to hear your story, and it just amazes me that you were able to do all of that. And my question is, what do you think your biggest lesson was? What did you learn looking back on that time of your life and building the campground? What did you think your biggest lesson was?
Oh, wow. That's a loaded question. I would say one of them would be, like Andrea said, you realize what you can do. Okay. When your back is against the wall and that you can push through. Definitely grew my trust in God and grew my faith during that time. And then I would say on the financial things, everybody has their own way of doing things, but in the end, cash flow is king. Mm. And I wish I had realized that, like, really early on and not well down the line.
Mm. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, tell us more about that when you say cash flow is king, and like what happened early that, and then what changed that helped you to, like, realize that?
Yeah. So I would say that, thankfully, again, I say it's God's grace on us. Financially, the business did well from the standpoint of some things that we did early on that the banker had us do that positioned us well. I also kept my job for 10 years while we ran that. So I was literally working, you know, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and I'd come home and work the campground in the evenings all weekend long, and, you know, did that for 10 years. And so that I was covering our personal expenses, and the campground took care of the campground expenses. But I was in masterminds. Tom and I both were in masterminds with other campgrounds. And I kept asking, when should we start paying ourselves? When should we start putting money aside? When is there a point in time where I won't feel guilty that if I take money out of the campground for profit, for reserves, for retirement, whatever it is, that I won't feel guilty? I just kept asking those questions, and literally nobody had an answer for me. Everybody was doing their own thing, and people that I initially had looked up to as I got dug in these masterminds with them, I was finding out that they were just utilizing credit cards like crazy, and they were in massive credit card debt. And so they weren't getting on top of anything because of that. They weren't paying themselves. And so they, you know, they weren't able to do anything beyond just, you know, the campground, do anything in the winter when the campground was closed type thing. Just several things like that. And I really, as I've gotten further down the line, have realized that the number one reasons businesses fail is because of cash flow. They have lack of cash flow. You know, they are chasing one thing after another. Like for us, it was chasing building that campground. You know, more is better, bigger is better, you know, get the next best thing. And even in real estate, you know, I see ladies, they're chasing one deal after another, and they're not really paying attention to how much cash flow are you really getting by the time you've paid your taxes, by the time you've paid yourself, if you've even paid yourself, how do you know how much cash you're making? And if you're not making cash, what are you doing? You've created yourself another job that doesn't pay you.
Right. Good point. Good point.
Yeah. So what was the shift? Like, what did you do that made all the difference, or that changed that dynamic that was different than what other people were doing?
Yeah. So I had like a light bulb moment, and I'm ashamed to say it was 12 years in to the process. And, you know, one of the things I learned very quickly on and tried to figure out where that balance was is your banker and your accountant have two completely different philosophies of how your books should look. So your accountant is telling you, spend the money, get rid of it so you don't have to pay taxes, you know, go buy a new truck, go buy, you know, whatever you need to do to get the tax burden down. Your banker is saying, well, golly, you hardly made any money, or if any at all, last year. Why do I want to give you a loan for whatever your new project is? So kind of finding that happy medium. But I had a random moment where I was in a hotel lobby with my banker out of Montana. We had been at a conference, and I started just asking him questions about how do I know when I can start setting money aside? And he said, well, how long have you been in business? And I said, 12 years. And he said, well, you should have a minimum of 1 year's worth of PITI and utilities in the bank. He said, if you want to impress me, you should have 2 years. And all of a sudden, as I left that conversation, I felt like I had permission to take money out of the business to set it aside, and that's okay, that I'm not taking from the business. It's okay to put money aside for us. It's okay to pay ourselves, you know, and because nobody's going to step in and do my job for free. Right. And if I don't put that burden on the business, especially early on, I'll never work that into the business. You just keep going and going and going and not paying yourselves, figuring, well, you know, we kind of get all these extra things on the side. But if you become incapacitated for some reason, somebody has to do your role, and they won't do it for free. So where does that cash come from if we haven't built that into the overall big picture? So I came home from that conversation, and I announced to Tom, we're going to put $100,000 away this year. And in a campground, you're flush with cash in the summer because you have half your season behind you. You can forecast your cash flow pretty well, especially after 12 years in. And so I did it. Now, what it meant is that we immediately had to cut expenses. That's the only way, you know, to put aside, go big or go home was always our philosophy. And I've told you this before, Andrea, it's the old toothpaste concept. You know, if I have a brand new tube of toothpaste, I'm going to squeeze out, you know, I don't even pay attention. I just squeeze it out and I'm brushing my teeth and it's falling out of my mouth everywhere. But I have clean teeth, right?
Right.
But at the end, I'm usually like I'm squeezing it down and I'm folding it in half. I'm pinching it and I get out one tiny little drop, but my teeth are still clean, right? Yeah. Well, I got strategic and intentional on how to get that toothpaste out to do what I needed to do. And the same thing with our expenses. I suddenly told Tom, you know, the relationship with Menards and Lowe's is going to be on the back burner, and we're going to look at everything through the lens of how do we put this money aside. And it changed everything for us. That first year we put $100,000 aside. The next year we did $200,000. The third year we did $250,000. And I suddenly in 3.5 years had over $550,000 sitting aside in cash. And after that first year, go ahead, Brenda.
I'm sorry. Is that above what you were paying yourself? That was just totally. Okay. Wow. That's awesome.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that first year, this is just my point being made, was 2019. Went into the winter saying, okay, we got to make sure our money lasts. March 16th, 2020, what happened?
The pandemic. Yeah.
The pandemic. Everything shut down. The phone started ringing off the hook. I need my money back. We were in the middle of a project. We needed the employees that we had to be able to work on that project to be able to open when we could open. So having that cushion meant we weren't in a situation where we were making decisions out of stress, but yeah. we were be able to be intentional and strategic with our decisions going into that year. So it just, it really hammered home to me the concept of having reserves, not touching those reserves, having them available in the event of an emergency. And, you know, Pace Morby, he follows this philosophy. And he has said if he had done it from the beginning of his real estate career, he'd have $5 million sitting in the bank, just sitting there.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, this, yeah, this reminds me, the pastor of the church on Sunday was talking about the story of Joseph and how Pharaoh had a dream. Joseph interpreted the dream, and basically God was telling them that there was going to be a famine for 7 years. And so they spent 7 years building up their reserves. And then that way, during that time of famine, like everyone in the world came to their doorstep because they were the only ones that were prepared. And I know that God didn't tell you that you were going to have a pandemic and to put those reserves in place, but boy, the hand of God in that situation.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So what can the rest of us learn from this? Cause, and I want to know, like, did you change things besides just stop spending money? Did you change things in your business that created more revenue so that you would have more to be able to put aside? Or did you just like slash your budget like crazy?
Yeah.
The initial thing right out of the gate was to slash the budget. Now, I had 25 employees and I wasn't going to cut employees.
Right.
I needed them to do the business. But what I began to do is I began to be very strategic and intentional about how we spent money. And that goes back to that whole balance I said between what your accountant is wanting you to do and what your banker is wanting you to do. And I just came to the conclusion that there's got to be a happy medium. You know, we're kind of trained when we go into business, do everything under your power to avoid taxes. But the reality is that you if you are paying taxes, it means you're making money. And so you need to set enough money aside that you can pay taxes on it and you have money left over. Oftentimes we don't think about that. And then we're scrambling, you know, at the end, trying to figure out how to pay taxes or how to avoid taxes instead of being prepared ahead of time, to do that.
Yeah.
And I would say, going into the next year, I began to alter some of our capital expenditures. So I had, and this, you know, if I can put a little plug here, this is what cash flow forecasting does for you. Mm-hmm. Because I had been watching the rhythms of our business now at this point in time, I had been, you know, looking at our KPIs, I had been looking at our financials, I knew the rhythm of the business, when we had peak occupancy, when we were slow, I could predict the income that was coming in, and I knew what we needed for general utilities, PITI, all of that stuff, how much I would need for payroll. And then I knew how much was left as cushion. Like I can either set this money aside, I can spend it, I can put into it. And so we just became really intentional about what we were spending money on. And it wasn't only through the lens of how do I avoid paying taxes? It was through the lens of how do I put money aside, get me out of my job.
Right.
Because I started paying a health price for working that much and that hard. And so that definitely, all those things kind of played into the overall picture of what we did as time went on.
Wow. Wow. I'm amazed. just listening to you, because I mean, I know you said you were, I think 10 to 12 years in before you got this information and began to make this shift. So if you would have had, just like what Pace Morby said, if he would have had it from the very beginning, if you would have had this information going in, and when you started the business, then, you know, I guess you would have the same answer. You would have accomplished.
Oh yeah. I've gone backwards and have said, I definitely would have walked away with probably at least $1.5 million in cash on top of what we sold the campground for. Okay. You know, I mean, you think about it, it's you can say, oh, I sold the campground for this much money and this is what we walked away with. But to know that you have an additional $1.5 million sitting in the bank that you've already paid your taxes on, you're not going to get lambasted for that. Yeah. You know, it's sitting there to do whatever you need, invest it, you know, go on vacation, whatever. You know, I look back and I could pull my hair out. And what's really funny is I didn't even know Profit First existed at this point.
Yeah.
I was kind of following this philosophy. Like I said, I had that epiphany after talking to the banker, and it wasn't until I was about 3 months before we sold the campground, I happened to pick up the Profit First book, and I'm like, oh my gosh, somebody wrote a book on what I'm doing. They stole my idea. I think it was written before I ever figured it out, but.
Oh my goodness. So do you believe that, like now you have knowledge of Profit First? I know you and I have talked about Profit First, and I just hearing about it, I know I need it, especially to apply it to my business. But do you find that most people don't take that step because of mindset or fear, or what do you think it is that stops people from changing up things and taking that step and implementing something new?
Yeah. I'm going to say, I'd love to hear Andrea's answer to this, but I'm going to say that we're kind of, when we go into business, we go into doing something we love. And 99% of us have no love for doing numbers. Right. We love the idea of the art of the deal. We love the house or the piece of real estate we're looking at. We love rehabbing and flipping, but none of us really love going back and looking at, except for maybe Olga.
Nobody, right.
Nobody likes to go back and look at the numbers and kind of follow up with things. And so you start getting down the road and you're constantly looking at that bucket and it has all this money in it. And you're not thinking about the fact that because everything's in one bucket, it's so easy to overspend. It's so easy to spend money that you shouldn't be spending because you have this false sense of security. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes what happens is people come to, I think, this epiphany when they're either on the verge of crashing and burning, or suddenly all the bills are just so looming that the, you know, it's like a siren going off. You better wake up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it for you, Andrea?
Yeah, for me. Okay. So I think there's a scarcity mentality that exists. And I think for me, I'm kind of on the flip side of that, where I, you know, ever since I can remember, have had this belief that the rules don't apply to me. And that I can, and the truth is, like, I always had this thought that I can out earn whatever comes my way. And and what that actually means is I was thinking I could out earn my stupidity, like as if there's no consequences. And I'm maturing, and I'm so grateful for that. And so much of that is from conversations that I had with you, Libby, and being able to say, like, it's not about whether or not you can out earn if something happens. It's about you making decisions differently and taking control. Because I, even during the period of my life when I'm still maturing in this area, but even during the time in my life where I was like, you know, there's no money, but we're buying properties anyway, right? And we got no reserves, but we're buying another house. Hello. And even during that time, I think, you know, I had this belief, like, I can out earn it. Yeah. Something else is going to come along, or I will make it happen. And the truth is that we make decisions very differently when we have money in reserves.
Yeah.
When your brain is stressed and trying to always figure out how to, like, just how to pay the next bill, versus if I've got reserves that I know that I can like, we're going to be okay, even if something doesn't go exactly the way as planned. Because guess what? It never goes exactly the way we plan, right. Especially in real estate, especially in a sales-based business that does not have a significant amount of recurring revenue. Like, the world can do this, money, you know, people's finances do this. I can't control. There's so many external factors that I cannot control. I can only control myself and how I set myself up for success or don't. And so that, for me, working with you, Libby, was one of the smartest things I did this last year, because and I had said at the beginning of the year, I'm going to get my finances under control. I'm going to get organized. And I know there's people listening to this, because I talk to women every single day that are like, that's my big goal this year, is I'm going to get organized with my finances. And that's what I feel like you were able to help me do, being able to, like, really look at, what are my expenses in my business and my personal life? What do I actually need in reserves? And, and we worked together for a couple of months, and within 3 months, I had 3 months of reserves. I now have, like, a tax savings happening, so that it's not a surprise. Like, I'm not worried about that stuff. I'm paying down my debt really fast. And these are all things that we worked on together. And I think having that, like, the wisdom that you brought, and then also the accountability, because I had to show up and tell you what I'm doing.
Yeah. It does my heart so good to hear all that.
No, and it does. I mean, it's also changed my relationship with my husband, and mm-hmm. how we operate. Because when I'm operating from a place of stress or thinking, well, I can out earn my stupidity or my overspending or whatever it is, like, that stress translates to the people around you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, the ones who have the negative effect of that are typically the people that are close to you. It's your spouse. It's your kids. Yeah. It's the, you know, your team members, if you have team members. And, you know, in a lot of ways, like, in those situations, like, it's not their fault. There's nothing they can do about it. If I've made decisions that God is here, and my belief is I've got to fix it, I've got to get us out, and if it is to be, it is up to me, then I'm kind of like, it's easy to build resentments that, why isn't everybody as stressed as me? let me help you with that.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Sounds like my household sometimes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. I think that when, you know, one of the things that I did this past year that was really, really helpful as well, is I started meeting every single week with my bookkeeper. Mm-hmm. And that was a piece of getting our finances under control. So, you know, so when, by the time I met with you and you asked me for information, I was like, I have that information. I can get that. I can ask for that information. Like, I can get it to you. And early in my business, that was not always the case. Yeah. I always felt like I was, like, behind figuring out like, what are things going to cost? How over budget are we? Where am I at with all my credit cards, or, you know, all of the things that felt just like chaos. Yeah. And so being able to do some really intentional things this year to get that chaos under control completely changed how we communicate, how I show up energetically, creatively. All of those things have shifted for me as a result of this piece. And I'm not perfect, and I haven't figured it all out yet. I'm still learning, and we're still working on it. But the biggest thing that you said earlier that was transformational for me was getting money out of my main account, because all my business funds were going into one account.
Yeah.
And I would see this big number, and then I would make decisions as if I had that big number to work with all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's not how this works. Like, you pay yourself first, you get it out of that account, you put it in reserves so that it, and you don't look at it. So when I am making a decision on how am I going to invest in my business next, you know, what do we need to do to generate income? I'm looking at the number that is the reality of what I actually have versus seeing all of my reserves in the same place, all of my tax money in the same place. Because if you're looking at a number that includes what you're supposed to pay in taxes and reserves for if something goes wrong, the number looks really big, and it makes us a little comfortable.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I like, as our human nature is, we want to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's uncomfortable when you start to see that number go really far down and you're like, but the good thing that that does is like, I have this peace knowing that we have a, I have a backup. And also I have an urgency to continue moving forward and building things in my business. And so in this last year, I doubled my income again. And part of that is because I didn't stay comfortable because there was a certain amount of money in my account. I felt like I needed to get after it because I've got financial goals that we're working towards. And I knew that that amount of money in that account wasn't going to, like, that's not going to do it. That's not going to hit right. all the goals.
Right.
And so that getting that, the finances under control and getting organized around that was a huge critical piece.
You know, now that we all have access to our bank accounts via our, you know, our phone, we get on there and, oh, look at, I have that much money in there. I'm good.
Yeah.
And it's a false, it's the false, false sense of security. We've trained ourselves that that is giving us a true financial picture and not looking at, you know, kind of doing, taking the time to do the deep dive. One of the things that I loved is that you said you're meeting with your accountant or your bookkeeper, you know, on a weekly basis. And that goes back to how you're always preaching, you know, who, not how.
Right.
You know, you need to surround yourself with, I call it the dream team, the people and the software that are going to help you achieve your goals and make life easier for you. And, you know, numbers are overwhelming. I hated them. I can't tell you how long it took me to get to the point where I was comfortable. And I actually then started looking forward to digging in and see what my profit and loss statement says.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people, think of your financials as like when you go to the doctor and you get lab results. You can walk in and if all they said is, hey, you know, your cheeks are rosy, you can touch your toes, you look healthy to me, see you later, you know, that's a false sense. They can't tell if you have high blood pressure, diabetes, if you have cancer, you know, different things like that. And so when you look at your financials, think about them as telling a story. They are a snapshot in time. And they're telling you a story of the financial health of your business. And instead of being afraid of what that story might tell you, look at it as an opportunity to take action, to make changes, to get healthier.
Yeah. Create better habits for yourself. Because I'm listening to you know, both of you, and I'm at a point where I need you. I know I need to do these steps.
Yeah.
I did. This is my year. I came into this year thinking of this year as a year of stabilizing my business. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I started doing at the beginning of this year is just what Andrew just was talking about. I'm meeting with my bookkeeper every Friday. We're going over what I spent. We're trying to stay on top of it because that for me has been the thing that has been kind of gotten out of control. I had a bookkeeper. Some things didn't go the way it's supposed to. I have another bookkeeper. They're cleaning up after the first bookkeeper. And now I am trying to think about this year going forward, creating better habits so that I can confidently sit down and answer those number questions without saying like, I think it's this, or I think it's that. And when you're in a situation like I found myself in where my business grew really fast, well beyond my abilities kind of keep up with the numbers, you feel like you're running behind the train and trying to jump on the train. But I know that it's possible to do. I don't feel like it's going to look like that all the time. But what you're offering and what you're sharing, for me, automatically, I know that's the solution because I'm not paying myself. And I know that I can. But it's also the understanding how I got here and what I need to do to move beyond it, what choices I need to make. So hearing the both of you talk, Andrea, you kind of give me an idea of, okay, this is what it's going to look like once I do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Once I say yes, that's what it's going to look like. And then with you, Libby, you're offering me the opportunity to do it. Let me show you how to do it. So what would be my, I'm sharing with you, I want to be a client. Okay. So what would be my next step if I decide I'm ready to take this leap of faith? I want to change my business. I want to improve, you know, how I'm operating my business. What's my next step?
Your next step, I always say start paying yourself. Ah. I don't care if it's $10 a week, or if it's, you know, a 5% of every deal that you do. Start paying yourself. You bring the most knowledge and the most value to your business.
Yeah.
And if you don't put the burden of paying you onto the business, you will never get to a point where that is going to be okay, because everything else will always supersede it. You have to, it's a behavioral mindset change that you are valuable. You bring the most value to the business, and it's 100% okay to take a paycheck or take a shareholder distribution, however you want to do it. You need to start paying yourself. And then the second thing, you know, would be look at your expenses. I call it an expense audit. Mm-hmm. Do an expense audit. Find out what's in there that shouldn't be in there, that you can get rid of.
You know, hearing you say that, what comes to mind for me, because it makes me wonder, like, why do I operate this way? And I know from my generation, you know, when you talk about business, you always hear people say, oh, you're going to lose money the first 5 years. Mm. And that's not always the case. But if you've been told that, and that's kind of like, okay, well, this to be expected, then you're not really thinking about those things that build towards paying yourself or the business actually being profitable in 2 years. Because that's kind of what was the story when people talked about business from the outside looking in, and you just constantly heard people giving themselves permission to fail for the first 5 years. So now, you know, so because as I was listening to you say this, I'm like, well, where did this thought process come from? Because we all know a lot of times it starts with mindset and the thought process and the images, you know, what we believe about the things that we're doing. And that's what popped to mind. It's like, I've always been told that, you know, you're not going to be profitable for at least 5 years from when you start a business. So it's like, wow, maybe I've been telling myself I don't have to pay myself for 5 years.
Because, I mean, you think about it. You've been told that you won't make money for the first 5 years, and 50% of businesses will fail in the first 5 years.
First 5 years. Yes.
And it's usually because of cash flow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's a good connection. That's a good understanding. Okay. Okay. I'm excited. I'm glad you shared this, girl. I'm glad you learned this and passing it on to us.
I'll tell you, you know, when the light bulb finally came on and we actually achieved doing this, you know, a couple things. One, it allowed us to exit the campground and build a dream home. We have no mortgage at all. And buy 120 acres of land that my husband loves to hunt on. So, I mean, the hard work and the discipline paid off from that perspective. But I'll tell you, I just, once the light bulb came on, I was just like, I have to tell everybody I can tell about this, because it's so discouraging to talk to business owners and find out that, you know, when they've really, I have somebody that I talked to that when we really broke down how much money their business was making, they were working for less than minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And because they just kept discounting their time in their business and what that, you know, looked like. And so that was a light bulb moment for them. They began to realize that what they were bringing to the table was more valuable, that they needed to increase their pricing. You know, it ends up rolling out in a lot of different ways. And you, like I said, you become more strategic and intentional in all those decisions instead of just like, well, it feels like I should do this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
You know, and I think there's something about real estate or like a business that is about investing for the future, because I looked back at my tax returns for, my tax returns the first year that we were in business in real estate. It shows that we made $15,000 and we lived off, and because we just invested everything back into the business, and then we decided to hold on to the properties instead of flip them and sell them. And so while we didn't make much money on paper, we like 10 times our retirement, you know what I'm saying? And so kind of like during that season, just like what you were building in the campground, when you're like, we didn't pay ourselves. Tell me what would your business have been worth if you hadn't learned what you shared with us, if you hadn't started paying yourself and putting money aside in reserves? What was the difference in that made in terms of the valuation of your company?
I'm going to say that it probably equated to $1 million+ in value.
Yeah.
You know, now we had been paying ourselves for a few years, but we were paying ourselves about half of what we should have been paying ourselves. And I started putting money aside in those last 3 years. So when we started getting offers for the business, the fact that I had to had three, or excuse me, 2 years of putting some pretty significant cash aside automatically increased the valuation of the business. You know, people who are selling businesses, the buyer and the bank wants to see that there's a lot of cash coming in, a lot of reserves, a lot of opportunity there that they can decide how to spend that money. Not that you are, you know, having expenses up the wazoo. Right. So I guess I can't put a number on it, but I can pretty much guarantee you at least $1 million, you know, valuation added because of the amount of money that we were putting aside.
Wow.
And, you know, we used to have somebody in one of our groups, and it took me a while to understand this, but he used to say, it, you know, it's not how much you make, it's how much you keep. And so you can have a business that makes $500,000 and a business that makes $1.5 million. But if both of them are netting $250,000 at the end of the day, the guy that's doing $1.5 million is working a lot harder.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so it, that's where that whole being intentional with things comes to play, and running things through, running decision making through the lens of what your goals are, and not just what you feel in that moment. It's removing that emotion that is, you know, when we see a deal, I always tell people you should be saying no more than you say yes.
Yeah.
Everything should be run through that lens. And when you run through that lens, it takes the emotional piece of, I want this so bad. I love it. It just seems so perfect. I got this gut feel, and you can weigh it against, you know, this is what our goal is. And if I do this, yeah, it might work out good, but it's going to take me on a tangent, and it's not really supporting that ultimate, you know, goal.
Right. Right.
Wow. Yeah. I love that you talked about like a gut feeling. And I think as women, like, our intuition is good, but I think sometimes we can be sincere and sincerely wrong. And because we think if it feels a certain way, then it must be right. And that's so wrong sometimes, yeah. You know,
numbers don't lie.
Sometimes they lie when you think you're going to make a lot of money and then it doesn't work out because you didn't really estimate the deal correctly. Like my own numbers lie. The real numbers at the end don't lie. Right. And
right.
So we learn better and then we do better. But
I know real estate is so fluid though. That's the only thing about, so you know, so actually going back and double checking that, you know, the numerous times, is what helps you to kind of stay on top of that. So it won't lie.
Right. But,
because part of the lying is we're lying to ourselves because we haven't done, in some cases, done the check off along the way to make sure there isn't something that was, you know, that you didn't prepare for 6 months ago that could take you out now that you're done. And that can kind of change the whole thing. Yeah. So being informed and not being afraid to check it, double check it, and, you know, revisit it again. Yeah.
And it's not that you're not going to hit bumps in the road. I mean, it happens to everybody. I mean, you're going to always have these moments in time where it's like, oh my gosh, what did I do? Or, you know, how am I going to get around this next hurdle? But the comfort that you get from the fact that you're prepared for something like that, that you can weather that storm, even if everything else crashes and burns, that peace of mind and being able to put your head on your pillow and fall asleep is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great conversation. Well, Libby, thank you so much for what you shared with us. Thanks for sharing your story and the things that you've learned over the years that all of us can benefit from. At the end of each episode, we like to challenge our listeners to do something this week to take bold action. What is one thing that you would encourage our listeners to do to take bold action this week?
Start paying yourself. and do an expense audit. So two things.
Okay. Okay. When you say expense audit, tell us what do you mean exactly? What should we do?
Look at your expenses, like look at all of them. I tell people you should do this at least once a year. Look at all of them. Find out if you have things that you are paying for that you don't really need, or maybe you're paying for it and you could get it cheaper and it would do the same job someplace else. And then things that are absolutely necessary, I can't do without. If you're consistently doing that type of thing and looking at your expenses, you're going to be a lot more in tune with when something comes along, whether that's a good decision or not.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. Yes. And I just want to like tap on to that, because we said who, not how earlier. And I told you I meet with my bookkeeper every single week. We meet on Mondays because I make it the first priority of the week is I gotta have this conversation. And I had her after, you know, you made me do this. That's what a good coach does too. Is like, she tells us what to do and then asks us questions until we decide to do it. And so, but my bookkeeper now does that for all of my personal expenses. So I have a QuickBooks for my personal expenses, not just my four businesses. And that's been pretty game changer too, because that's allowed us to make decisions differently and like realize like what's actually happening with our money. I'm so embarrassed, everybody. I'm going to tell you something embarrassing. You ready? We figured out we're spending $1,800 a month on groceries, and that does not count eating out.
And is that crazy?
It's crazy. And people are like, yeah, groceries are nuts. But we just buy like really high quality food, and we live across from a grocery store, so we go all the time and we just bop in there like we're in Europe or something, like just buy food every day. And so like having a plan like that made us go, we've got to be more intentional. We've got to make a plan. No more willy-nilly spending. And we're more conscious about deciding when we eat out, and because we realized how much we were spending on that stuff as a result of like doing an expense audit, not just for the businesses, but for us personally. That was major.
Yeah. You know, awesome. I tell people that if your personal finances are not in check, you'll never get your business finances in check. I mean, they go hand in hand. If you don't care about where your personal money is going, you're not going to suddenly wake up and care about how the business finances are going.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, Libby, if somebody would like to get started working with you or wants to know more about how you help, what's the best way that somebody can connect with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook, so they can always direct message me that way, Libby DeRosa. And I have a group called The Profit Project for Women Entrepreneurs on Facebook. They can come through that. My website is LibbyDeRosa.com. And I'm on Instagram, Libby.DeRosa.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for everything that you shared with us today. Thank you for being here, Libby.
Yeah.
Thank you, Libby. It's always good to see you. You're such a blessing.
Awesome. And Brenda, how can people get connected with you if they want to connect with you outside the show?
Okay. You can find me at my website, which is brendastroud.com. You can also find me on Facebook. Brenda A. Stroud, my business site, my business Facebook page or my personal page, which is just Brenda Stroud as well. And you can also find me at Roar on the Roar Facebook group and Roar Society.
Love it. Thank you. All right, sisters. Well, if you want to gain more clarity in your life and your business, I want to invite you to join me for a free workshop for women entrepreneurs on how to build your personal clarity, confidence, and connections so that you can increase your income and live your best life and inspire others to do the same. And you can register for that for free at AndreaEngstrom.com. If something on the show today resonated with you, would you subscribe, give us a review? And if you're a women entrepreneur, you can join my free Facebook group, Bold Women in Business Sisterhood. Thank you again to my co-host, Brenda Stroud.
Thank you for having me and inviting me.
and thank you, Libby DeRosa, for being here.
Thank you, Libby.
Thank you, Andrea.
All right. Till next time, I'm Andrea Engstrom, and we are your sisters in business, encouraging you to take action on your dreams, show up to your life with power and authenticity, be bold, be tenacious, and make it happen.
Bye.